listening to Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Welcome to New Earth Kids, a radio show featuring kids who care about their community and the environment in which they live. On this monthly show, kids of all ages talk about the challenges facing planet Earth, and we tell you how we are creating and implementing solutions. New Earth Kids is part of the Kindred Continuum series and airs the third Monday of the month at 10 a.m. and is replayed on the air the following Sunday at 4 p.m. New Earth Kids is produced by the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance's Youth Empowerment Program, Thinking on a Mountain, for Gila Members Community Radio. Thinking on a Mountain equips kids with the knowledge and skills to navigate an uncertain future while addressing climate justice issues. And now, New Earth Kids.
We have Worm Box to learn the circle of life for fruits and vegetables of how they grow in soil, then they turn into soil.
They eat all of our leftover food stuff, like fruits and vegetables that we put in there.
I think we should compost vegetables and strawberries and like any really fruit or food, because it would help the earth, and then try to recycle other things.
One of my favorite projects that we did was the one where we got to look at worm cocoons through a microscope.
I've learned that carbon atoms are harming our atmosphere, and I think we can stop it by either creating electronic powered engines, which Tesla and other companies are already doing.
For me, I think the most important thing I learned about is how the life cycle and how we wouldn't survive without the composters being there. It kind of is weird being like, my life pretty much relies on worms.
Today on New Earth Kids, we'll find out what fourth graders from Jose Barrios Elementary School are learning about composting, soil health, and climate change. I'm your host, Nan Franzblau, and I'd like to begin by thanking the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance. Their youth empowerment program, Thinking on a Mountain, and the New Earth Project are just two of the many projects that UGWA has undertaken to support healthy habitat and a thriving community here in Southwest New Mexico. Now, New Earth Kids.
I am really excited to be here at Jose Barrios Elementary School in Silver City, New Mexico, with fourth graders from Ms. Hughes and Mr. Duran's classes. Every month, the New Earth Project has been coming into the fourth grade classrooms to work on special projects. We've studied redworms and worm anatomy, cocoons and vermicomposting. We've learned about various kinds of decomposers and talked about the importance of composting. We've talked about what makes soil healthy. We've evaluated waste, the things we throw away, and alternatives to just putting those things in the landfill. And we've looked at how our everyday activities can affect amounts of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the ocean, and the soil. Today, we are joined by six kids. Let's begin with introductions. We'll go around and please tell us your first name, age or grade, and one thing you want listeners to know about you.
Hi, my name is Tristan, and I am almost 10.
And what do you want listeners to know about you?
I want them to know that I love playing soccer, and having worms is a great responsibility.
My name is Mia. I am 10 years old, and I really like radio.
My name's Dakota, and I'm 10 years old, and I like cheer.
My name's Arena. I'm 10 years old, and I like to show dogs.
My name is Aurelia, and I am almost 10, and I like to play fiddle with Jeannie and Ken.
My name is Solomon. I am 10. I like to fiddle with my fingers.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the activities that you've done with the New Earth Project. So when we first came into your classrooms, we brought a worm box. Tell us a little bit about worms.
Well, I know that they need water and a lot of food to live, and that their habitat is most likely going to be in soil.
They need moisture, and they also have to be in dirt, and they can eat plants, food, and paper.
Why do you have a worm box in your classroom?
We have a worm box to teach ourselves about the soil.
What about soil?
About how it's made.
We have a worm box in our classroom because we're getting to know about like how worms like live and stuff and their habitat and how more soil is made.
I'm pretty sure we have a worm box in our classroom so we can learn how decomposers decompose rotten fruits and other things.
I'm pretty sure that we have a worm box to teach how our environment grows and how most things are made that we eat from the soil. We have worm box to learn the circle of life for fruits and vegetables of how they grow in soil, then they turn into soil.
Also, I think it's to teach us about worm anatomy and how they help the environment and how they breed.
Ooh, okay. They go fast.
Yes, they do. What do the worms eat?
They eat paper, leaves, and vegetable scraps.
They eat all of our leftover food stuff, like fruits and vegetables that we put in there.
They eat strawberries and like leftover maybe rotten fruit or vegetables or something.
Basically, they would eat anything that is not plastic, metal, or something that would hurt their bodies. They would only eat broccoli and strawberries and paper.
They eat everything they can turn into soil and help the plants grow.
In the wild, they resort to leaves, apples, strawberries, cherries, blueberries, basically any fruit or leaf that they can get their hands on.
Good. So you guys have named a lot of things that worms eat, and you've said they turn it back into soil. What is an advantage to having worms eat our waste? Why are we doing that?
We are doing that so less food gets into the landfill, so we can help the earth be more earthy.
I'm pretty sure the advantage is all of our food, not all of it, but most of our food will go to worms and they'll be able to eat it instead of it getting thrown away and just wasted. We could turn it into soil instead of it just being wasted and turned into garbage.
I think an advantage is a lot of food doesn't go into landfills and there will be more soil and stuff for plants to grow.
I kind of think the advantage is that we don't overpollute the earth.
So I say we can also use cardboard for worms, paper, maybe leftover apple cores that we ate, or avocados, cherries, strawberries, and they could help when it's like fall, they could help clear out all the leaves.
Another advantage of having the worms in our classroom is instead of throwing our old apple cores or whatever from breakfast, we can put it in the worm box so they can decompose it and turn it into soil instead of throwing it in the landfill, so it just produces gas that makes the atmosphere smaller.
Any of you guys been to the city landfill?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, I have.
Can you describe what does it look like and smell like?
It looks very, very dirty and it stinks very bad.
Well, my dad told me that when he first started coming there, it was a flat ground, but now there's this big mountain that they have to go up to put all the dirt there. So I think it's been there for a really long time, so they really need to build another one.
I went there with my dad, and there used to be some trash, but now there's, like, trash everywhere, and it smells, like, really bad, and it's really weird.
What is it that makes it smell bad?
The methane being released from any food, leftover food.
There's a lot of organic matter in there because a lot of people do throw that away. Why does organic matter smell bad when it's decomposing in the landfill?
Because there's not that many decomposers, so it starts rotting and molding before decomposers can get to it.
It's like a graveyard of vegetables, metal and stuff, and it smells like icky. And there's a lot of ravens and stuff.
Kind of what Tristan said, there's not too many decomposers, so all the food starts to rot and like goes to waste instead of the worms eating it.
When we have healthy decomposition with healthy decomposers, worms and fungus, what is a really important thing that they need for decomposition?
There's a proper amount of moist, which also isn't there in a landfill. And plus, if they get caught in the crusher, that's a big problem.
The crusher really compresses things. And so when things get compressed and mushed together in the landfill, what is not there that healthy decomposers need?
Like, it doesn't have, like, the oxygen in there for them to get in there and start decomposing.
That's right. So it's anaerobic decomposition, right? It's decomposition without air, and that's what makes it smell bad. I want to move on and talk for a minute about how you take care of the worms in your classroom. What are some things you do to take care of your worms?
Well, whenever I'm taking care of the worms, I would always open the box and then spray it a bunch. I would take some out and like put it in the tray that's under it so we could get to the bottom, because the bottom's always like really dry because most people don't get it. Then I would write something that I saw, like I saw a whole sack of worms all together or something like that.
You keep your worms moist.
Yeah.
And then you make observations about the worms in your observation notebook. Why is it important to keep the worms moist?
They breathe through their body, so they need moisture to breathe through their body. Because if their body gets too dry, they can't breathe out of it.
I think we have to keep them moist because, well, it's kind of like what Tristan said. They need the moisture to live and stuff.
Yes, air dissolves in the mucus of their skin, so they have to stay moist to breathe.
Like, if humans didn't have water, then we'd die, and if we don't breathe for, like, 2 minutes, we'll also die. So we're kind of like worms, and we need to breathe and eat and water.
Do you think it makes it easier to take care of the worms when you realize that they have a lot of the same needs as humans?
Yes.
When we have the hunger and thirst need, that's our bodies telling us we need this specific thing, and the worms also probably have that system.
I think that they need a lot of water so that, well, like our bodies, our lungs are inside our bodies. Our lungs need to be wet to breathe, and theirs will probably be need wet to breathe too, so we would need to spray water on them.
So worms don't actually have lungs. That's one thing that's different from us. You guys learned about worm anatomy. What are some parts that worms have that are similar to humans? Do you remember?
They have hearts, but they also have like five.
So they have five hearts.
Even a human having five hearts.
Five. That would be crazy, right?
Yeah,
good.
Five,
thank you. What else do worms have that humans have? Do you remember from worm anatomy?
I'm pretty sure they have eyes.
No. So they have eye spots, parts of their bodies that are sensitive to light, so they know when they're above ground.
I think they have a mouth.
Yep, they have mouths. That's how they eat our food. You guys have studied your worm boxes pretty extensively, and you have seen worm cocoons, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. What does a worm cocoon look like?
A worm cocoon is like bead-like. It's a small little ball, really small. And then it's kind of see-through.
A worm cocoon is like an egg ball thing, and it's like half a centimeter or something big.
Really tiny?
A worm cocoon is like a fish egg, but a little bit smaller and way more delicate. Once when we were actually counting worms, I found a cocoon.
You did? Exciting. Do you remember how many worms, how many baby worms live in a cocoon?
Like, maybe like two or three.
How many worms can be in there?
There can be at least 25 worms in there. Really?
5 to 8 or something?
Yeah, that's the average. So somewhere up to 14 worms can live in the cocoon. Why do worms have cocoons? How does that help the babies?
It's kind of like a shelter from the elements. Rain, lightning. Well, lightning is kind of big. But still, if they're deep in the... If they plant the egg... the cocoon deep in the soil, they can hide from a fire.
Right, so they help protect them?
Yeah, and like till they're ready to hatch out and explore the world, eat as many leaves and vegetables as they want.
I'm pretty sure that worms have baby worms have cocoons so that if they don't get the moisture they need, the moisture will be inside of the eggs.
That's right. So the cocoon also provides nourishment and moisture and protects those little babies in there.
Thanks for listening to New Earth Kids on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org. New Earth Kids is part of the Kindred Continuum series and airs the third Monday of the month at 10 a.m. and will be replayed on the air the following Sunday at 4 p.m. Now, back to the kids.
We are here at Jose Barrios with fourth graders, Solomon, Aurelia, Reina, Dakota, Mia, and Tristan. And I'm so excited to be talking with you guys about different projects that we're doing together. The New Earth Project comes into the school every month. And we are talking about things we've learned and ways to help keep the environment healthy. We have talked about healthy soil. What do we mean when we say that soil is alive?
They have creatures in it that help the soil. Also, there is live cocoons in there. Some of the insects that live in there, sometimes they're bigger, sometimes they're smaller. Like anthills, they make their hills out of small pebbles. But worms are different. They live in the soil, and they don't go into giant groups. They're like more individual.
It's cool that you brought up ants and worms, because both of them, by the way they move through the soil, they help to bring air into the soil that helps keep things alive in there.
They also have fungus in the soil to help it be soil and stuff.
I think that soil is living because it has living things in it, like insects and plants that are also living.
I think the soil is alive because it needs water and air, just like us humans.
So you guys learned about things that live in the soil, and you learned about the...
bacteria.
FBI. Okay, not the government organization, but when we talk about FBI, what are we talking about?
Fungi, bacteria, insects?
That's right. Fungi, bacteria, and insects. Things that live in the soil and help keep it healthy. Does anybody remember how many living organisms there are in 2 teaspoons of healthy soil?
Maybe like a billion.
More than that, I think.
What? I'm pretty sure there's a quadrillion.
1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000
in there.
That's right.
Because they're so microscopic that just a couple, just like this earth could have like
millions of I don't even know what decimal place that is.
So we have over 8 billion people on the planet, right?
But there's 8 billion, like, microscopic bacteria in the soil.
And 2 tablespoons.
2 teaspoons. Just a little tiny bit that would fit in your hand. If it's healthy soil, that has as many microorganisms as there are people on the planet.
If you try to grow a bean plant, say in a flooded area, a really dry area, or just right area, it's more likely to grow in the just right area than the flooded area or the dry area.
It's kind of like human anatomy. Like, you're basically this one giant world where all your cells live. And the microscopic stuff that we can't even comprehend is all on this planet.
Let's jump ahead to the activity where we talked about things that we throw away. Okay, things we throw in the garbage can. All the hands went up. Let's just go around the circle here and talk about this. Justin?
We could throw away, like, unrecyclable things, like torn up bags, mm-hmm. Broken glass, and other stuff like that.
Well, we can now really throw away anything because the garbage people don't do recycling no more, and I really think they should. But whenever I can, I try and save, like, my orange peels or apple cores for the worms here at school.
So we're talking about things we throw away, and I hadn't really asked a specific question yet, but all the hands went up, so I want to hear what you guys have to say.
I think we should at least try to, like, this city to try and recycle again, because I think it would really help the landfill. And we should also, like, put some stuff into the compost and stuff like that.
Things that I might see or that we see in trashes or would be like coffee beans, apple cores, or leftover food.
Things that I see in the trash on a normal basis is coffee beans, fruits and vegetables, metal cans or plastic, broken pottery or anything like that.
When recycling metal, when it comes to that, like an old car part, you could turn it into a metal scrap. And then you can recycle it for some sort of other car. And there's also the scraps that can't be recycled, but can be used in a different manner, like in a building or other important things. And then we could just have the worms out in the part where all the decomposing
organic matter.
So, like, there's also the financial thing. I mean, how much does it cost to take the car? How much does it cost for the building? How much electricity is being used? And all that stuff, because that could be putting more carbon into our atmosphere than it could be more bad than good.
You know, that's a really good point, that extracting resources to make things like cars or extracting metals and processing them does take a lot of energy. So it makes sense to recycle those things. We talked about different things that you guys have in your garbage cans and other things we can do with them. So you guys mentioned coffee, you mentioned vegetables and fruit. What can we do with those things?
What we can do with those things is compost them. My cousins have this roll machine thing, and they put pumpkin guts and coffee grounds and potatoes and stuff in there, and they, like, turn it around and, like, you know, like, make compost.
So it's a tumbler.
Yeah. And we just had chickens and they died, so we're using the place where they were for compost, because it already has, like, the chicken droppings and the compost that we, or the food that we used to feed them.
I think we should compost vegetables and strawberries and like any really fruit or food, because it would help the earth, and then try to recycle other things.
Let's talk about that for a second. Solomon brought up recycling metal. What are some other things that can be recycled or reused?
Like unbroken glass bottles and plastic bottles and paper bags and plastic bags and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And paper bags can even be composted,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Things that can be recycled would be like broken glass, because if you could make it back to regular glass, and then plastics, water bottles, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually recycle broken glass, because at Earth Day, I saw someone who had glued all this broken, colorful glass and made it into like a beautiful lamp, and it was really pretty.
We played a game to demonstrate the importance of decomposers in our environment. And you guys remember playing this game?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah? Tell me a little bit about this game.
So we have a certain animal. Somebody is picked as a predator. And when there isn't any decomposers, the predators die out. They have nothing to eat, and thus they starve to death.
Right, so it shows you how decomposers impact everything.
So there are three categories, decomposer, prey, and a predator. And if there wasn't any decomposers, the predators would eat all the prey, and there wouldn't be any prey left. So the predators would just be like the only things like other than humans.
So you're saying that the predators eat the prey eat what?
Plants?
Right. Okay. So most of the players are plants, because plants are at the foundation of our food chain. So we need plants, and in order to keep growing new plants, what do we need?
Soil.
Soil with?
Decomposers.
And plants.
Yeah, with decomposers and plants. And the way we get new plants is from decomposers. So what were some of the roles you guys had in the decomposer game?
I think I had a butterfly.
You were a butterfly. So a caterpillar's dependent on plants, right?
I was a butterfly and a fox.
And a fox, right. So a fox might eat maybe a mouse
bunny.
Or a bunny, and bunnies and mice are dependent on?
Plants.
I was a kangaroo rat.
And what do they eat?
They eat vegetables and fruits.
They're also dependent on plants.
I got eaten by the fox because I was a bunny.
I think I was like some sort of rat, and thus I probably was eating the plants.
Mm-hmm. So you were eating the plants, and the plants needed the decomposers so that they could keep growing and reproduce.
It was a mole rat.
Oh, a mole rat. Oh, cool. Do you guys have any favorite activities from our visits?
We had one where you would get the bowl and you would put a bunch of bowls everywhere, and then you would have to get a task. And then you would have to read it, and then if it said put how many beads in there, you would put that many beads, and then whichever bowl with the most beads would win.
Those beads represented what?
Carbon atoms.
When you would pick a card, the card would tell you that you were doing some sort of activity, and that activity would either add or take carbon out of things like the atmosphere or the ocean or the soil. What are some activities that actually put carbon into the atmosphere?
Driving to Alaska.
Driving to Alaska, yes. That puts quite a bit of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
I think one of them was like going out to get pizza with your friends and then driving an hour back home.
Flying an airplane.
Airplanes, yes, put a lot of CO2 out in the atmosphere.
Flying to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The war in Ukraine, the aircraft used jet fuel, and thus it uses a lot of carbon, and there's
so much carbon atoms, and if it's high altitude combat, that means they're going to be using a lot of fuel to get up there.
That demonstrates how we use the fuel, which has carbon in it, and then when it goes into the atmosphere, it makes the carbon dioxide, causing climate change.
Something good that would be like composting or growing a garden and raising worms like we are.
Yes, and so that was something else we talked about, ways to capture carbon from the atmosphere. And Aurelia has mentioned composting, growing worms, and gardening, because all of that absorbs carbon and puts it back into the soil.
Also, riding your bike instead of driving a car is better for the atmosphere.
Walking saves, I forgot what it was called. And also, what Aurelia said, growing a garden and recycling things and composting.
Like Tristan said and Dakota, walking and riding a bike is way better than flying a plane and taking a car. And it's also better for you. But like, say if you had to go to Alaska, you probably don't want to walk or ride a bike.
Yeah, sometimes it's necessary to use fuel. But if there are times when we don't have to, then that can help. What is something else that absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere in order to live?
Food and growing gardens.
So plants absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and then what do they emit that is necessary for us to live?
Oxygen.
Say again?
Oxygen.
Oxygen.
Like, yeah.
And food.
And food. So plants provide food and they provide oxygen. Any other favorite projects that we've done together?
One of my favorite projects that we did was the one where we got to look at worm cocoons through a microscope.
Ah, and what did you see when you looked through the microscope?
I saw like two or three in each of them wiggling.
You saw them wiggling? Very cool.
Mine was also when we got to look at the worm cocoons under the microscope, and I saw a bunch of veins and like five worms in there.
Wow. One of mine was definitely looking through those buckets to see how many worms we could find and looking for the cocoons.
Uh-huh. So counting the worms in the worm box as well. Do you remember how many you counted?
Like 15.
We divided it up, so you found 15. Do you remember how many were in the box total?
Like 100,000.
One of my favorites was probably the one that Tristan said when we got to look through the microscope. It was really cool to see all those like little baby worms, and the cocoon kind of looked like pinkish, and it was kind of see-through.
When it turns pink like that, that means the worms are getting ready to hatch. So that was really exciting.
Another one of my favorite activities is when we raked leaves and put it in our school garden.
Ah, yes. And why did we do that?
We did that for compost reasons and for worms to eat the plants.
If our planet does get overrun by our actions, we have already been sending rockets, and if in like 100 years or so, they're probably going to discover inhabitable planets that if Earth dies, they have another planet.
Well, we would also need there to be an atmosphere that has enough oxygen and the temperature range in which we can live, and that's kind of a problem with trying to find another
planet.
Exactly.
You are listening to KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. This is New Earth Kids, a program where we bring you monthly updates of what kids are doing in our region to promote sustainability and cope with climate change. New Earth Kids is sponsored by Thinking on a Mountain, a youth empowerment program administered by the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance. Let's return now to our conversation with fourth graders at Jose Barrios Elementary School.
Let's talk for just a second about the food that you guys separate out in your cafeteria.
What we do is we get these little trays from the cafeteria. So we put all the food in a red bucket and then all the trash into a big, huge trash can. And then the trash goes to the landfill and the food gets decomposed or given to, like, animals that need it.
We have one big black trash can and, like, three little red trash cans. The red one's for the compost and the black one for all the trash. And I'm pretty sure after we're all done with lunch, all of our food that we composted into that red bin, this guy came and got all the buckets and brought it to a special place.
Whenever trash goes into the trash and the compost, the stuff you can compost, goes in the composting, I'm pretty sure they take it out to the garden and put it in, like, the soil, so then we can have healthy soil.
So what we do is we have trays, like Rena said, and styrofoam. So we have milk jugs, probably some, like, fruits and vegetables and burger or something. And then once we're all done, then we take it to the janitors and they separate the food into categories. The unused things, the things that we haven't touched, like the milk or whatever, we put that on the little stand and then we throw away the trash and we put the food in the other trash cans and it gets composted.
You guys know that it gets composted. The stuff that we have taken gets composted on a farm called San Vicente Farm down by San Vicente Creek.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that last semester the food was being collected and I think it was being fed to chickens. Do you guys know anything about that?
It was getting collected and then they were giving it to our janitor's chickens and Miss Dawn's chickens.
Okay, I'm glad the chickens got some food.
Yeah. Since I don't think we were doing the worm thing back then, so we were using it for chickens, which is also a way to prevent gas for the atmosphere, so the chickens ate it and then...
Yeah, recycling it as food.
Almost every day last year, I would ask Miss Dawn what she was doing with a bucket of a bunch of scraps and, like, fruits and vegetables, and she would always say, I'm going to save it for my chickens at home.
Okay, I have one last question before we say goodbye, and we're going to just go around the circle on this one, okay? But I want to know, what is the most important thing you feel like you have learned through your activities with the New Earth Project so far?
I've learned that carbon atoms are harming our atmosphere. Also, I knew it before I was put into the New Earth Kids Project. And I think we can stop it by either creating electronic-powered engines, which Tesla and other companies are already doing, but still that there's also the energy powering for the factories, which could release CO2 unless it's a windmill.
For you, the energy piece is the most important thing that you feel like you've learned more about?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks, Solomon.
For me, I think the most important thing I learned about is how the life cycle and how we wouldn't survive without the composters being there.
The decomposters.
It kind of is weird being like, my life pretty much relies on worms.
The decomposers are vital. Thanks, Aurelia. So the question is, what is the most important thing you've learned through your activities with the New Earth Project?
That worms are very delicate and we basically need them to keep our Earth healthy.
Thanks, Mia.
We need them so that we have healthy fruits and vegetables to eat in, like, fruit salads, for Olive Garden, too, because that's, like, one of my favorite restaurants.
You can get good salads there. Thanks, Tristan.
One of the things I've learned is that now we know that there is going to be more, less forest and all that stuff because of everyone and everything, like, taking over all the cities. All the cities are taking it over.
And I also learned that the worms, even though they might seem gross to some people, that they might be, that they're actually helping the earth.
Nice. Thanks, Rena.
I think the most important thing that I learned, and pretty much everyone else, is, like, how to decompose and how to recycle and, like, what to recycle and what to decompose, and also how to take care of worms and stuff like that.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Dakota. Aurelia, did you want to add?
And all, I just had a really good time with the worms and stuff, and I hope we keep doing them for a while.
Good. Well, we certainly will. And then in April, we're going to take a field trip, and you guys are going to put those worms into a big compost bioreactor so they can keep eating food. That's where your cafeteria waste goes, and you're going to get to visit those. So that'll be super fun.
And there's also, in a game called Subnautica, they have a bioreactor where you can put plant matter for energy.
Wow.
And it seems like it's stirring it up into one green thing. You can also put fish in it.
Oh my gosh, that sounds cool. Thanks so much, Dakota, Raina, Mia, Tristan, Aurelia, and Solomon. You guys are amazing. I love hearing your ideas and everything that you've learned so far. Thank you so much.
And that concludes our conversation with fourth grade students at Jose Barrios Elementary School. We'd like to thank fourth grade teachers Mr. Duran and Mrs. Hughes, Principal Trujillo, and all the fourth graders for their support of the New Earth Project. New Earth Kids is produced for Gila Membres Community Radio with music by Jason Shaw. See you next month.
Thank you so much for listening to New Earth Kids, part of the Kindred Continuum series on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. We'd like to thank the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance and their program, Thinking on a Mountain, for sponsoring this show. We would also like to recognize KURU General Manager Marcus Hansen for his ongoing support. May we all continue to listen, learn, and grow together. Bye now.